From the American Tobacco Historic District in downtown Durham, this is Due South on WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Children of immigrants often find themselves interpreting for their parents, and that can be particularly fraught when it comes to health care.
Being a child and having to go with your parents to interpret for them when they're really sick and sharing with the provider that, hey, yeah, my mom's been sick for like 3 days, you know, what can we do, right? So it has been hard.
That's the voice of Sendra Yang, now in her 40s. She's one of several people from North Carolina's Hmong community interviewed for a recent story that aired on WUNC. It's titled, As Hmong Immigrants in North Carolina Get Older, Their Adult Children Shoulder the Labor of Interpretation. The story was co-reported by Eli Chen of WUNC and Lena Hong of WFAE in Charlotte. It's about the challenges many aging Hmong North Carolinians face as they navigate language and cultural barriers in accessing health care. And as the title suggests, it's also about the adult children who often serve as interpreters for their parents in hospitals and clinics. Today, we're chatting with Eli Chen and Lena Hong, and also the person whose voice you heard at the beginning, Sendra Yang, president of North Carolina Hmong Women Association. Sendra, welcome to Due South.
Hi, nice to meet you all, and so happy to be here.
We're glad you're here. We're going to bring in Eli Chen and Lena Hong here in just a few moments. But first, for you, Sendra, a basic primer of sorts to start. Where are the Hmong people from, and what can you tell us, briefly, we're going to layer this and get to more of it later, about their path to North Carolina?
Yeah. So traditional oral history is that the Hmong migrated from China because of persecution into Southeast Asia, where the majority of Hmong who reside in the United States are from. And my parents are also from Southeast Asia, specifically from Laos. And then because of the Vietnam War and the secret war of Laos, they then became refugees, went to Thailand, and then had the opportunity, fortunately, to come to the United States. And then when Hmong refugees came to the U.S., there's a lot of churches, community organizations that sponsored a lot of the Hmong families to come over to the States. And my grandparents, they settled in California.
Okay.
And I think for my family, it was a blessing in disguise because in California, there was a lot of farming, agricultural opportunities where in Southeast Asia, a lot of the Hmong communities farmed a lot. So then they were able to bring that skill with them and use it in California. But for my parents, they were looking for opportunities for, you know, just to support our family and grow our family. So then they relocated to North Carolina in the early 90s and particularly got jobs in the manufacturing industry. And so that's kind of how a lot of the Hmong families ended up here in North Carolina and particularly in the Hickory Morganton area.
Yeah. And we're talking furniture in that
region?
That
is correct. Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Sendra, so you're grandparents migrated here in the mid-70s. Your family relocated to North Carolina in the 1990s. Talk to us a little bit about language, the language dynamic for you as you were growing up. Were there generations of English speakers in your house? Did that responsibility and kind of navigation fall on you? What was that all like?
Yeah, so my grandparents, they basically spoke no English when they came over to the U.S., and my grandfather fought for the U.S. side during the secret war of Laos. And so when he came over, you know, he got plugged into different types of services that helped him learn the English language enough so that he was able to become a mechanic and fix cars. But unfortunately, my grandmother at the time, she had to take care of, you know, my aunts, uncles, my mother, and she never got the opportunity to learn English. And as far as my parents, my father was very educated. He got the opportunity, even though my grandparents from my father's side, they were farmers. They were very poor, but they were able to save and have enough money to send my father, who's the oldest son in their family, of course, to go to school. And so in Laos, he was able to go to school. He spoke French. He spoke Lao. He spoke Thai.
Wow.
And he spoke Hmong. And
Wow. Just
imagine then having to come to the United States and then have to relearn a language. I think for him, it was still a struggle to learn a new language, yeah. develop a new life and identity.
Your father's name is Mur. You're telling us a little bit about his journey there. He spoke four languages before he came to the United States and had to navigate one of the most, I don't know, clunky languages there is, American English. And we wanted to play a little bit of tape from your dad as he spoke recently in an interview about some of these challenges from his perspective.
Our people, like me, we cannot speak English very well. It's not easy because your kid have to work. So some people, they have four or five kids. They're busy every day. And old people like us, sometimes they have no time to help.
That is Mur Yang, your dad, Sendra, speaking recently for a piece that he was interviewed for, and we'll get to that in a little bit. We're going to get into much more of this, but I guess just briefly before we have to step aside for a moment, tell me a little bit about how your role in supporting him has changed or increased in recent years as he's gotten older and kind of moved through that 70 birthday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so growing up, I've always had to be that intermediary person for my parents as a young child, helping them to go to their doctor's appointment and help translate for them. And it's difficult as a young child because first, you're still trying to comprehend the English language yourself. I was still trying to learn to read and write English. And just imagine at that time, I was put in this spot where I had to translate or help translate all of these big medical terms for my parents, right? And so that was very difficult. And I did the best I could with what I had and what I knew at that time. But as I grew up and as my parents grew older, they needed more type medical care. They needed other things, right? And I was there to help. But the challenge lies with the English language and the Hmong language is that not every medical term can be translated literally to the Hmong language, or there's just basically no Hmong term that I could use to translate for these big medical terms. Because in reality, like the Hmong, when they were living in Southeast Asia, they were living in the mountainsides. There was really no type of Western medical care. They really just relied on what's been taught down, traditional medicine, herbal type medicines.
Sendra Yang, president of North Carolina Hmong Women Association Incorporated, is here. After the break, Eli Chen of WUNC and Elena Hong of WFAE join the conversation. This is Due South on listener-supported WUNC. Welcome back. It's Due South here on listener-supported North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. You've been hearing from Sendra Yang, and we also want to say hello now to Eli Chen, digital producer at WUNC, and Lena Hong, digital producer from WFAE. Eli, Lena, welcome to Due South.
Thanks for having us, Jeff.
Yeah, hey, Jeff.
Eli, Lena, you co-reported, co-produced a story. It's titled, As Hmong Immigrants in North Carolina Get Older, Their Adult Children Shoulder the Labor of Interpretation. And that's part of the reason we're gathering and talking about this community and some of these challenges today. Eli, why did you want to report and tell this story?
Yeah, so this actually began with an article that I saw WFAE report late last year, and it was about the challenges across, you know, many immigrant communities in North Carolina having issues with getting access to basically social safety net services like Medicaid or food stamps. And being more focused on covering Asian Americans, I zeroed in on the part of the report that focused on Hmong Americans in North Carolina. And just for context, I'm new to North Carolina. I'm still getting to know folks in the state. And I thought it was really interesting that the state has the fourth largest population of Hmong people in the country. And it's growing quite a bit. It's grown by, you know, more than a quarter in the last decade. And even though Hmong families have been around for, you know, several decades, much of the interpretation seems to be falling on, you know, the adult children of immigrants. And so that was something that was talked about in this report from WFAE. It was referencing a report by the Urban Institute and UNC Chapel Hill. And basically, I thought, you know, this is such an interesting issue. I would love to hear from the families that struggle from this challenge. And so I reached out to Sendra Yang, and I reached out to other folks in the Hmong community just to kind of hear what this is like. And what floated to the surface was that so many adult children of, you know, refugees and immigrants were, you know, taking a lot of time out of their day to interpret for their parents, taking their parents to the doctor. And this seemed like a pretty tremendous need.
Mm-hmm. Lena, we heard from Sendra earlier in our conversation about how her family settled in the western part of the state, not the far west, but in the Hickory region. Can you tell us a little bit about which counties you focused on as part of this report and why you chose those?
So the Hickory-Morganton area is kind of north of Charlotte, about 30, 40 minutes out. It's in Catawba County, which is in WFA's listening range. I think Sendra's father actually lives in Waxhaw, which is a little south of Charlotte. It escapes me what county that is in right now. But yeah, we decided to focus on those counties because those are where the majority of the Hmong population live. I kind of have a little bit of the opposite experience of Eli. I was born in Charlotte. I've been raised in Charlotte my whole life. I went to UNC Chapel Hill. So I've been in North Carolina for a really long time. So I guess like I kind of have like a different perspective as an Asian person. Specifically, I'm Vietnamese, so I'm also Southeast Asian, living in Charlotte and kind of these communities. There are so many like different communities in North Carolina, specifically Southeast Asian minorities, and Hmong is just one of them.
Eli, you mentioned, I think, a really interesting notable variable about growth a minute ago. You said that the Hmong population in North Carolina, I believe I heard this right, has increased by 25% over a period of time.
Roughly, if you compare the 2020 and 2010 census.
Yeah, I mean, that's considerable growth. What do we attribute that notable percentage of growth to, if we have a sense of that?
You know, actually, I don't know the answer to that question. It's just, I just thought that was pretty noteworthy in that, you know, as this population grows, you know, and especially, and I was looking specifically at the number of people over 65 has grown especially. And so I actually don't know the answer to that question, but I don't know. Sendra, do you have something to say about that?
Yeah. If I may add, I personally think that the growth is there because the families are choosing to stay. And the children who were born in North Carolina are choosing to invest and live in North Carolina and contribute. You know, a lot of the children who were born in North Carolina go to state schools, state-supported schools, because it's cheaper than to go out of the state, right? The other thing is that they're choosing to go to school here and work here and contribute to the growing North Carolina economy. So they're here to stay. And I see, for me, like I have a family and I have young children, and I would like to raise my family here. And I would hope that my family and my children choose to stay here and be part of the North Carolina community. And I think that's why we're seeing that growth.
In terms of language, you obviously speak multiple languages. What about your children? Are you raising them to learn Hmong as well?
Yes, I am trying to teach my younger children. I have a 7-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 2-year-old. I would have to say the predominant language that is spoken in our household is English.
Okay.
And that is the predominant language my children speak currently. However, I integrate into their language different Hmong phrases, different ways we, you know, the culture is also part of the language, in my opinion. And I introduce like different cultural aspects, the Hmong art of pando or needlework sewing, the different instruments that we use in the Hmong culture for different ceremonies. And the other thing is the North Carolina Hmong Women Association see that there is a need to really teach the Hmong language to our younger generation. So we have teamed up with two community leaders in the Hickory area, Hickory-Morganton area, to do a summer language program, which is launching this summer, to teach the younger generation the Hmong language, the Hmong culture, and also feeding them Hmong food.
Sendra Yang, president of North Carolina Hmong Women Association, is here on Due South, along with Lena Hong, digital producer at NPR member station WFAE in Charlotte, and Eli Chen, who is a digital news producer at WNC. Before we move on to interpreters, tell me a little bit about that food, please.
Yeah, so I think for me, Hmong food has been such an integral part of growing up because my parents didn't have a lot of money when I was young, and they really focused on having their own garden, planting their own food, and through that, there's specific types of grains that they enjoy, right? And so then I was able to enjoy those types of grains. My parents love raising their own chickens.
Okay.
So then I had like free-range organic chicken growing up, and those are a lot of elements that I still miss and enjoy. And when I visit my parents, those are like treats. And like my daughter loves the organic chicken, just plain, you know, boiled with Hmong herbs. Organic chicken is my daughter's favorite dish. When I say, oh, you know, we're going to grandma and grandpa's house, we're going to have chicken, she's like, oh, grandma's chicken. I was like, yes, grandma's chicken.
I want to shift gears a little bit. Eli and Lena, I'm interested in getting a sense of what kind of infrastructure, and that's probably too strong of a word, there is within healthcare systems in the North Carolina counties that you looked at that have these relatively high Hmong populations as we think about interpreters and helping to bridge these language gaps, either between an aging population or just people who need assistance in communicating with their doctors and their healthcare professionals. Are there an adequate number of interpreters, or is this something where they're lacking?
We definitely got the sense that there needs to be more Hmong interpreters, because as I said before, much of the labor is falling on the adult children to interpret for their parents at doctors' offices and other healthcare settings. We reached out to, you know, the state. We also reached out to Catawba County. We spoke with a community health worker at Catawba County. They have one Hmong person working there who is kind of doing a lot of things that it's not even, you know, healthcare is just one of these things. This person helps out with, you know, filling out forms for, you know, Social Security, housing, et cetera, and all kinds of things that the community might need. But she's got a lot on her plate. And speaking to, say, one person's experience, Sandra's father, Mer, he told us that he had trouble, you know, asking for an interpreter and sometimes would have to, you know, he experienced long wait times on the phone and, you know, was told that he would have to wait for an interpreter coming from either Minnesota or California.
Actually, Lena, I want to bring you in first before I pivot back to Mer. Lena, what more can you add to what Eli just mentioned there about the interpreters or lack thereof?
Yeah, like what Eli said, it seemed like a lot of it was lacking when we were just looking around. It seems like local counties like Catawba County and the state recognize that there is a need for it because available on the state website, there are interpreted forms or like websites and articles in the Hmong language. But I think it was really unclear to us how effective or helpful these forms actually were and if there actually were the resources that the state was promising on the sites, if they were actually being used.
What did the state have to say about this? What they've done or what they're trying to do or what they won't do?
So actually, when we reached out to the Department of Health and Human Services, they did not provide a staff person for an interview, but their communications person sent me a long list of links that were kind of connected to all kinds of different social safety net, you know, forms and documents that they said some of them were translated, some they were working on translating, and basically directed me to reach out to refugee organizations and local, you know, governments. So it seems like, you know, I want to note that the state is likely, you know, having to serve many different refugee, you know, communities. And so nonetheless, it's trying to do its best. That's the sense I got in terms of serving, you know, a significant community like the Hmong community.
So in my experience, healthcare can be quite clunky to navigate. You've got your acronyms, you've got your coding, you get 15 different bills for what seemed like a routine visit, and they're not all the same amounts of money that you're being told you have to pay, right? And I'm saying this as somebody who has all kinds of privilege. So I'm curious, Sendra, and I want to kind of recenter this back to the element of lost in translation, which you alluded to earlier. Are there particular reflections you have or things where you talk about different phrases, different terms in the Hmong language? Are there things that you in particular have had a hard time making that bridge, so to speak, translating when maybe there isn't a natural way to translate something?
I think for, like I was sharing earlier, for the Hmong community, because of where they came from, which is the rural areas, mountain sides of Laos and Thailand, and not understanding and being familiar with Western medicine or healthcare in general, right? A lot of the terms as cancer or tumors or things like that, they don't understand that concept. There's no literal translation for those types of medical things, right? And that's just one example. And I think for my family and my extended family in the Hickory Morganton areas in general, the struggle is still there to really deeply understand and get the medical care that they need and really deserve. And I still think that, you know, interpretation services for the Hmong community should be standard of care, right? You know, I feel like for my father, he shouldn't have to ask if I can get someone to interpret for me. They should already know that he needs it because of the previous appointments that he had, and make it so that every time he goes in, that there's interpretation services available, right? And then as far as like resources, if the interpretation services are there, make it known. You know, do we need signs in Hmong, translated in Hmong, that says we have interpretation services? Ask or tell somebody on staff or something like that, right? And then really just stepping outside of the box to really come up with new innovative things that we can do to really meet our patients, our Hmong patients, where they are. And like, I completely understand, because the state has other refugee communities and other individuals to also try to allocate all their resources to serve. And Hmong is just one of those communities. But I still believe that in counties where there are higher percentages of the Hmong community, there should be more resources directed and targeted to support the needs there, right?
Sendra Yang is president of the North Carolina Hmong Women Association. Lena Hong is with us on the line from WFAE in Charlotte, where she's a digital producer, and Eli Chen is digital news producer at WUNC. We'll return in just a moment as we continue talking about the Hmong community and some of the healthcare hurdles that they face in Western North Carolina. This is Due South on listener-supported WUNC. Welcome back to Due South on WUNC. I'm Jeff Tabiri. I'm here with Eli Chen, a digital news producer at WUNC in studio, and Lena Hong on the line. She's a digital producer at WFAE member station, NPR member station in Charlotte. We're continuing our conversation about their recent story about Hmong immigrants in Western Carolina and the challenges many of them face in navigating the healthcare system. Sendra Yang joins us too. Sendra was interviewed for that story, which also focuses on adult children of Hmong immigrants who often serve as interpreters for their aging parents at doctor's appointments and in hospitals. And to that point, I want any one of you to jump in here and just remind us about hospitals and whether or not this area we're talking about is something of a healthcare desert. Because as I was synthesizing your reporting and thinking about it, I thought, there are already some built-in challenges, but I would bet for a number of folks in this Hickory area, just as in other rural reaches of the state, you often have to go to Charlotte for certain kinds of medical procedures. You need bigger health systems at times. And I was thinking that might present additional challenges, but please tell me I'm wrong.
So for my family, that's one of the reasons why my parents relocated to Charlotte, was because my parents needed more specialized care. Even though they have their primary care doctor in the Hickory area, which is, by the way, I want to acknowledge, is the first Hmong doctor in the area that all the Hmong parents go to. But even though you have to think, like, as a doctor and you're supporting that many Hmong
parents, you can't possibly spend the amount of time needed to help translate every minor detail needed, right? And so, Jeff, just to further comment on that is that is true, because more specialized care, you do have to go to larger regions like Charlotte. And for my parents in particular, both of them require more specialized eye care, more specialized foot care, and especially the knees for my father. And those types of services are just not available in the rural counties such as Catawba County and Burke County, which is where Hickory and Morganton are.
Do we have any sense about the number of Hmong healthcare providers who speak the language? So, in effect, taking out the middle person, no interpreter. How often or in how many instances do we have any sense of it?
So, from my knowledge, he is the only primary care physician.
Only one.
Yeah, the only one that supports, like I said, all the Hmong families. If he can, you know, fit them in his schedule, he does that. And I understand that's a big burden on him, but that shouldn't be on him. It should be on the healthcare system. It should be on those community counties to find funding, to bring in other, either nurses, other doctors, or other resources to be able to help fill that need and that gap.
I want to ask you all as well about some of the cultural differences as we think about Western medicine versus Eastern medicine, and just perhaps how the Hmong people have viewed different treatments, have adjusted, adapted, or not adjusted or adapted to some of the medical approaches here.
Yeah, I can share my experiences. They, like I said, they really just understand using herbal remedies, or remedies that have been passed down through traditions, through their parents, grandparents, right? And the trust for Western medicine is an ongoing relationship where they're still trying to build that trust of saying, okay, if a doctor prescribes me X, Y, and Z for my diabetes or my high blood pressure, that I would take it as they're telling me to take it, or as prescribed, right? And that, I think, is still part of the discussion. But I think if we're able to fill the gap of healthcare communication or health literacy, because at the end of the day, translating and interpretation services all comes down to health literacy. And does that patient understand what you're trying to advocate or share that healthcare information with that individual, right?
Yeah.
And it all comes down to that. And if they're really able to fully understand the scope of their disease state, really understand the scope of how their medication is really truly helping them, then I think that transition from herbal, traditional, to truly believing and feeling that comfort and understanding Western medicine, then I think it'll be easier for them.
Yeah. Lena and Eli, you interviewed a lot of people for this story that we're talking about, which you co-reported, which was published recently. I'm interested if you'll both touch on religion a little bit and how that element, that factor, is an important part of understanding the dynamics at play.
Yeah, so I had spoken with Honey Yang Estrada, who runs the North Carolina Community Health Workers Association, and she herself is also Hmong. She told me, you know, basically there's two religions that need to be considered in this greater context. There's the shamanistic religion that especially many older Hmong people, you know, follow, and then there's also Christianity. And I wish that we had talked, you know, more with some of the older Hmong folks about how this might play into, you know, their experiences with the healthcare system. But the community health worker who I had talked about earlier, Sao Vu, she had told us when she came to the U.S. initially, she was pregnant, and she had a lot of challenges with understanding what doctors and other specialists were telling her. And she had an issue where she told us that her child, when she was pregnant, was not getting enough oxygen. And so she was trying to understand this condition. Mm-hmm. And the doctors basically suggested that they induce labor, which was not a term that she understood. Mm-hmm. That term does not exist in the Hmong language. And so I believe she told me that her husband had consented to this procedure without knowing what it meant,
wow.
which was pretty scary for her. And when they realized what was happening. And this was, and when they actually got help from a Hmong speaking nurse, thankfully, to understand what was going on. They actually delayed having the procedure for a bit because of their religious beliefs. And so they said, so what Sao had told us was that they wanted to leave it up to God. And they let that, you know, they basically delayed it for a week. And then when she wasn't having any contractions, it seemed things did not seem to be improving on her end, then they agreed to have the procedure.
Eli Chen, digital news producer at WUNC, is here with us in studio on Due South. So too is Sendra Yang. She's the co-founder and president of North Carolina Hmong Women Association. And on the line from Charlotte is WFE digital producer Lena Hong. Lena, you shared with us earlier in the hour that you grew up here, and this story and reporting on this story, I'm wondering what you learned or what surprised you in the process of reporting this story.
I think what not like surprised me, but kind of just like being able to talk to all these people. And even though like I'm not Hmong myself, I grew up around Hmong people, like being Vietnamese, you know, there are a lot of immigrant groups here that kind of come from similar circumstances, being refugees from the Vietnam War. And that includes Vietnamese, Cambodian, Laos people too. So just being able to talk to Sendra's family, Sendra's father, and Linda, Sendra's twin sister as well, it was kind of interesting to just be like, oh, like, I actually, like, I really, like, understand, like, where you're coming from. Like, when I was speaking to Linda and she was saying how there always needs to be someone who goes with her parents to these appointments, and it's the same circumstance with, like, my mom and, like, my grandma as well. And I also remember talking to Murr. And I had told him that, oh, like, I'm Vietnamese. I, like, grew up around here as well. And just, like, during the interview, he would say things like, oh, like, you understand how it is because you're Vietnamese. Like, you understand that, like, this younger generation doesn't really know the Hmong language as well as I need them to for my needs. And you understand that being Vietnamese, or you understand that because you're Vietnamese and you know, like, you know the history of how bad this is. So I guess just, like, being there and just learning more about the community as well, because I think that the Hmong language is, like Sendra has been talking about, a unique challenge for the healthcare system specifically.
Sendra, in terms of clearing some of these challenges or trying to alleviate them, awareness is certainly an important staple. Resources, and you alluded to it earlier, is an area where I think you said, you know, there could be more funding. There could just be greater resources. What else is part of the solution here? What else do you advocate for? Would you like to see?
Yeah, as part of the North Carolina Hmong Women Association, one of the efforts that we're trying to lead is to conduct a community needs assessment on our Hmong community in North Carolina. And nothing like this has ever been done before. And what we anticipate or hope to achieve with this community needs assessment is really to quantify and document in data, in research, information of what our Hmong community needs, right? And healthcare, interpretation services, and translation needs is part of that data needs collection.
Yeah.
And what we hope is that once we're able to complete this community needs assessment, able to quantify it in data, then try to find resources in the community in North Carolina to be able to really say, hey, X number percent of Hmong community say that we need this. So we need this, right? And a lot of the things that we found is that in grants, they need hard numbers. And this is part of trying to get those hard numbers so that we can find grants to support some of this need. But with that saying, we shouldn't just rely on a nonprofit
right. That's
just starting. We as a community, we as people who live in North Carolina should really extend a hand and help each other out. Like if anyone hears this story and it touches them, right, or they identify in some way, reach out to us. I think that if we all work together, we'll be able to you know, find a solution, find a way so that our Hmong parents, your community, will be able to work together to be able to achieve this.
We are unfortunately almost out of time, but before we get there, I wanted to turn to Lena and Eli. What else is notable from your reporting on this topic for this story that perhaps we haven't touched on yet? Lena, anything come to mind?
I think something that Eli and I have talked about is I think it would be interesting to kind of explore that kind of that elder immigrant generation, because there it's not like there's going to be more people like them. You know, they're just going to keep growing older. They come from a very specific circumstance of being like a aging refugee population. Mm-hmm. So I guess it would be interesting to explore that, not just within the Hmong population, but also the other communities that this might affect, like the Lao, Cambodian, Vietnamese population, of having like pretty similar experiences.
Lena Hong is a digital producer at WFAE, NPR member station in Charlotte. Eli Chen is a digital news producer right here at WUNC. And Sendra Yang is co-founder and president of North Carolina Hmong Women Association. And they have been chatting about the Hmong immigrant experience and some of the healthcare hurdles and challenges that exist for the Hmong community here in North Carolina. Thanks, y'all, for joining us on Due South.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Due South on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC.